receivers left and right. Cousins, back to pass, fires to the end zone! Yes! Touchdown, Vikings! Chad Beebe, well done!
Josh Allen has him lined up. Bills second and eight at the Chargers 20. Josh going to throw it behind him. DeBeasy going to throw it again to a man wide open. Gabriel Davis, touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! Cole Beasley to Gabriel Davis. How about that?
Just inside the left hash to win the game. Pepper snap. Wisnowski has it down. Robbie Gould has it straight ahead. And good! The 49ers have beaten the LA Rams again!
What a nice little present at the end of November. Huh? Little 49ers victory clip right at the end there.
I thought you were going to talk about the fight on Saturday. I was like, yeah, actually, I had a good time watching that.
Is that the lead? Is that how we're starting?
No, I'm kidding. We'll go with that later.
Is that how you want to start?
Big fight. You know, Mike's back. He's in his 50s and he's throwing, you know?
I would Michael Buffer that thing, and I would have Mike Tyson in one corner and Roy Jones in the other corner, and I would just belt out at a total combined age of 105. Mike Tyson, Roy Jones.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. But yeah, the 49ers, telling you. They're back. They're back. No?
Well,
defense look good. Mostert looking good.
I don't think any team that has Nick Mullins at quarterback is allowed to declare itself back. But I enjoy the fact that they won yesterday and that every team they're closest to for a playoff spot in the NFC lost. Arizona, Tampa Bay, Chicago. Like they're going to play a game in December that matters. And when everybody started getting sniper attacked from the roofs of stadiums going down with knee injuries and everything else that's happened, if you told me that they'd be playing a consequential football game in December, I'd have told you I'd be happy with it. Now, the funny part is, Ziggy, is we don't know where that game's going to be played. Because Santa Clara County, California has...
Yeah, how about that?
Banned all practices and gatherings and games. It doesn't matter if you're an individual or a workplace or a sports team or whatever. So it sounds like the Niners might have to play their next two home games in Arizona.
Well, and I was looking into it to see what they want to do. So it's 150 miles outside the county you can't come into without quarantining
for 14
right?
days. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see the post game with Mostert, how he said he's away from his family? So did he just choose not to bring his family? I guess he decided to leave them at home because he did a post game. His family's not even with him.
No. And Kyle Shanahan,
he started crying
Shanahan, the head coach, said the very same thing. And you know, it didn't occur to me until I heard Shanahan say it. Stupid me. It's December tomorrow. Like it's Christmas.
Yeah.
You're about to ask your players to leave their families behind for the entire month leading up to Christmas or Hanukkah, whatever it is a particular person may celebrate. Like it's not fun at any point of the year, Ziggy. I think it adds another layer now at this time of year.
Well, I think they're going to, I mean, at this point, how many outbreaks are there? Right. There's the outbreaks. Then, like you said, they have the exposure.
Yeah, we were talking about that off the air. So let's be, because I couldn't figure out, you and I were saying this on Friday, like why the hell are the Baltimore Ravens getting umpteenth opportunities? It's interesting as a digression that Pittsburgh has a couple of positive cases now. Right. And they have had no contact with Baltimore, but they have. The illness, at least a little bit running through their locker room right now. But the difference between the Ravens and the reason why the game got rescheduled twice is that the Ravens have an outbreak. There are 20 people, players and staff, who have COVID-19 right now. And the Denver Broncos, who played a football game yesterday without a quarterback, just the National Football League staged a game yesterday in which one of the participating teams put in a special request mere hours before kickoff for an assistant coach who played a handful of games at quarterback in college 20 years ago to be the quarterback for that day's game. Of course, that was rejected by the league, and then they pulled a practice squad roster guy who's played two games at Wake Forest or something many, many years ago. But that's the difference. The Broncos had an exposure event where Jeff Driskel, their quarterback, got COVID, and then the other quarterbacks didn't wear masks around him, and so they were ineligible to play because they were potentially exposed. And the NFL differentiates between an outbreak, Baltimore, and an exposure event, Denver or Pittsburgh or whatever. I learned something.
I think I could have done better than 1-for-9. I was like, okay, let me.
Are
so watching
kidding?
The game. First off, why is it even being
you?
Why
you
is
have
it the,
this? You have this newfound confidence because you hit a 101 mile an hour fastball that now you can be Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect in those old vignettes way back in the pro wrestling days of the early 90s. He'd throw the football up and catch it himself. He'd hit home runs in batting practice. He'd bowl a perfect 300. You think you can do anything now? No yeah. chance.
So the numbers were 1-for-9. 13 yards and 2 interceptions.
Better than I'd do. Kendall Hinton is a better quarterback than me. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Yeah.
Not good enough to play in the NFL, it turns out. Stunningly, but better than me.
So Ryan Leaf was the last quarterback in 98 to have more incompletions than touchdowns in a game. As he finished with 1.4 yards per attempt. So I just 1-for-9.
That is a deep dive, by the way. Ryan Leaf, 1998. That would have been his rookie season, the second overall pick to the then San Diego Chargers, who went first Peyton Manning. There's been much, much written about the two divergent paths of those careers. Ryan Leaf, more incompletions than touchdown passes. Well, but that's... that's normal, though.
I think it's supposed to be interceptions.
Oh,
it's
more interceptions. Okay,
yeah,
more interceptions than touchdowns.
Interceptions. Two interceptions. Sorry, I say incompletions. You had less
I'm following now.
You get me now?
He had more interceptions than he had completed passes in the game.
Yeah.
I got it. Two interceptions to one completion. That makes more sense. Holy crap.
So, yeah, 1-for-9, and he had the two interceptions. I think... okay, I may have thrown more than two interceptions. I'm guessing I would have done that, but I think 1-for-9, I could have done better.
I would have been 0-for-0 for 0 yards. We would have run the ball all day. We just would have. I just would have handed it off.
That's what I was a little confused watching it. Why wouldn't they run it even more? Like just off the bat, just run it. Like, just run. Why would you not
because
run everything?
Because they'd, Ziggy, I didn't watch a moment of the New Orleans-Denver game, but I would imagine that the Saints would have just stacked the box.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got enough of an offense, obviously, where they're not going to lose if they give up 7 points. So, stack the box, honor the run, and if Kendall Hinton proves that he can beat you with his arm, then you adjust. But he clearly proved he couldn't. And so you just stuff the box and you don't stop the run game, and that's it. But Denver's got nothing. They got no hope.
Well, they got 3 points out of it, so that was pretty impressive. I was surprised they got on the board at all.
Oh, maybe probably like a defensive turnover or something, and then they're already in field goal territory.
But honestly, how do you – that game should get moved.
Well, then you're going further down a rabbit hole where you're starting to move every game. If you say the Denver Broncos can't play today because all of their quarterbacks are unavailable, but another team that's dealing with a quote exposure event where, I don't know, a running back. Well, let's use one that really happened. The 49ers had a quote exposure event. This is what I learned about that Green Bay game 3-4 weeks ago on the Thursday night. Kendrick Bourne, a wide receiver, had COVID, and a couple of other receivers and Trent Williams, their left tackle, were considered having been exposed to Kendrick Bourne. They couldn't play that night. So they went ahead with that game in the very same way that the Denver game went ahead. So if you start saying, well, they can't play this game because a particular position quarterback is unavailable to them, then other teams who've had similar experiences, even though their quarterbacks weren't compromised, are going to say, well, what the hell are you doing? So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. You end up with a farce of a football game if you go ahead with the Denver game, as they did yesterday. But if you don't play that game, if you reschedule that game, you've got other teams like the 49ers saying, you sent us out there undermanned. Why can't Denver do it? What are the rules here? Where's the consistency? It's an impossible time. It's impossible to figure all of this out and do it properly and hit a thousand, right? And not make mistakes. But there was no way in the name of consistency after I learned the difference between an outbreak and an exposure event, as the NFL defines it. There was no way in the name of consistency that the league couldn't send Denver out there.
So I'm wondering now at this point, and the league might already do it, but do you not have your QBs and all your meetings and your coach and your video and your training? How are you not separated from your team? Like, they should have different kitchen, different locker room. They shouldn't even see the team until game day. Like, I understand you have to practice together, but practice. You go out on the field and you meet for practice.
Talking about,
do you know what I mean?
Practice.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm trying to say right now? Like,
the quarterbacks away. That's what you're
different. They're on the other side of the stadium. They're in the visitors' locker room, wherever you have to put them. If you're practicing in your stadium or you're in your practice spot, you don't even have them interact with the team. They come out for practice, and it should be a limited practice, especially now going forward, and they shouldn't have any contact with anybody from the team.
Not a bad idea. I just don't know how many kitchens they'd have kicking around their facilities there.
Yeah.
You make an interesting point, though.
Yeah, but as long as you have your quarterbacks, I mean, I don't want to say who cares about everybody else, but like, as long as you got somebody to throw the ball.
Too bad Peyton Manning was playing golf this weekend. He could have.
That's my quarterback.
Could have strapped. Thank you, Terrell Owens. Talking about our pal Tony Romo there. Yeah, Peyton was playing golf. Maybe they could have brought him back for one more afternoon. He couldn't have done worse.
You know what? That could be our poll today. Who would you bring back to play that game for the Broncos? One game, you had to bring him out of retirement. Who's your quarterback?
Did he have to have played for the Broncos? Because there would be two options, right? It would be Elway or Peyton.
No, it can be anybody. Who would you bring back for one game? Who would you bring back one game to play? But then we have to talk about whether, like, are you expecting them to play well now or just, like, the best? You know what I mean? Well, there's so many different ways to take it.
Are you expecting them to play as if they're in their prime, or are you expecting them to play as if they're their current age?
Yeah.
I mean, my answer is, my guy's in his late 50s now. Steve Young is my hero. Steve Young is still my favorite athlete across all sports to this day. Like, he was a teenager. When I was a teenager, he was the 49ers quarterback. Like, he was, because my fandom started right in the late 1980s, just at the end of the Montana run. And Steve Young took over in 1991, and that was it. And I watched him all through the 90s. They won a Super Bowl. And he was what today's modern quarterback, in a best-case scenario, is. He could run. He could throw from, you know, he could throw from the pocket. He could scramble and throw with accuracy on the move. He was everything. brilliant. His highlight packages are all over YouTube and everything. You can watch him. It's just, he was great. That would be my guy.
Yeah, Manning. I mean, Manning would be the, I bet you he would walk away with any, if we did like a four player poll, I think Manning would walk away with, would walk away with it.
I love this. We got some texts coming in from a 647 number and from Lance in Whitby on a 416. Tim Tebow. He is still in great shape. Hey, you're talking about a former Bronco. Timmy Tebow. I mean, he really threw the football with accuracy, but two-time national champion at the University of Florida, Heisman Trophy winner.
I feel like...
oh, yeah. Gainesville, baby.
I feel like I saw a lot of Kaepernicks out there. Like, they should bring him back. That's a whole different conversation, though. Like, that's a more serious conversation to have than just, oh, who's your favorite quarterback? They're, like, expecting him to come in and, like, come back and be competitive and win. I had this conversation with you. How do you ice a guy for 4 years and then expect him to come back? Oh, yeah, here's your opportunity. Like, right. Are you kidding me?
There are some really old backups in the NFL. Now, they haven't been iced in the sense that they're still kicking around with teams and they're at practice every week and they're involved in the meetings and all of that, who get into games and look very much like the 39, 40, 41-year-olds that they are, with very limited playing experience in the recent past. But you make a good point. I mean, at some point, and people were saying that about Kaepernick 2 years ago, though, Ziggy, even 3 years ago. He's been out of the game for a year. How can he possibly?
A year, okay, fine, come back. After 2-3, and then it's all of a sudden the NFL was like, okay, yeah, somebody should bring Kaepernick back. I'm like, you expect a player to come back after you just pretty much banned him from the league for four years? Like, how can that happen?
It would be one thing to sign Kaepernick and then get him into practice, get him into the meetings, get him into all of that, and then throw him out there 4, 5, 6 weeks later. It's another thing for Vic Fangio, the head coach of the Broncos, to call Colin Kaepernick up the other day and say, you know that game we've got in 2 days? Yeah, we don't have a quarterback because everybody's got COVID or potentially been exposed to it. So could you just fly to Denver and play for us? Two completely different scenarios. Although I do take Kaepernick's name seriously. I've never really been comfortable with what's happened to him. Andrew Luck gets a vote on a 416 number. Andrew Luck was a great quarterback, and he was a great quarterback out of Stanford right away. Like, he was pro ready before he was in the pros.
Yeah, and he just didn't want to keep doing it. He just couldn't deal with the rehab and all that stuff.
He'd had the head stuff happen. He'd had a major shoulder surgery.
Well, I've had both of them. I've had the concussion. I've had the shoulder problem. I know what it's like. Yeah, it's literally your whole day is rehab.
You remember rehab. You remember we had Andrew's dad Oliver on when he was.
Yeah, actually.
I think Oliver Luck had a falling out with Vince McMahon over the failure of the XFL, but maybe we should tap into our contact Oliver, see if we can get Andrew on, ask him if he's had a pinky finger surgery.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty serious.
You've had the shoulder. What about getting that pinky finger repaired?
It's an important finger.
It's an appendage.
It's an important appendage.
Just got that tiny nail on the
my fingers. I'm a month now. It's good. I'm moving it around.
We haven't had an update on the finger.
Yeah, we didn't. Well, you haven't asked, to be honest. I'm a little upset
Well, let me.
If you really want to know my feelings about it,
your finger?
Oh, no, it's great. Thanks. Good. I don't think it counts when you bring it up yourself, but it's good.
Well, I'm glad to know. I'm glad to know that you're well and that you're bending your finger for the first time in 15 years.
Yeah, I am.
Years.
It's a little. Yeah, exactly. It's been about that. Yeah. So my finger was, bent. I couldn't move it. Had some tissue damage, got surgery a month ago, and I still can't feel it. It's still numb.
And you injured it what? You injured it falling off?
Falling off
a speaker at stages? Was that?
Yeah. You want to know what text is?
Did you actually hear it?
Here's what I need. I need one of the listeners to text in. What should I tell people how I hurt my finger? when I tell this story, what should I say?
Well, I already have mine.
What is yours?
Well, so you got hacked. You got slashed. You got slashed on the glove.
That's not very exciting.
No, but I mean, it's tougher. I'll tell you this. I got no shame. I got a slight scar on my left cheek, like a very slight scar, but it's there. You,
if I can't see it.
If I tell you it's there, you'll see it. And on more than one occasion, so more than once and less than three times, probably twice in my life, I've been asked about the scar. But before I'm allowed to answer, both individuals asked me if I got high-sticked in a in a men's league, a beer league hockey game. And I answered yes both times, even though that's not true. Because why am I going to tell the story that I used to have acne where that scar is, and then one day when I was like 19 or 20, I shaved over it, and it kind of broke up, and then I was left with a scar. That's the truth. I feel much better now, by the way, copping to that, being honest about it. If you're one of the two people who asked me about my scar, it's really just acne. Not a high stick, not a hero play in a beer league hockey game.
I need to know what I tell. I can't say it's like a hockey injury. I need something good. Like, how'd you hurt your finger? Chainsaw in the backyard. Something.
All right. Text us to 59590. What's Ziggy's story when he's asked how he hurt his pinky finger? Are you actually going to tell us?
You can't say pinky finger like that. We needed the real name for it, too.
What's the real name for it?
It's not pinky. Not pinky.
You got your okay. And I'm holding up my fingers here on FaceTime. Yep. You got your index finger.
Yep.
You got your ring finger, which is hard to hold up by itself.
You couldn't wait to give me the finger.
You got your pinky finger. And last but not least, you got your middle finger. What else do you call the pinky finger?
It's something else. Trust me, it's not pinky.
Oh, it's something else, all right.
Yeah.
You're going to have to Wikipedia that. Type in pinky finger and then see what comes up when it gives you the probably 20 paragraph read on the history of the pinky and its variety of functions. Kansas City goes into Tampa Bay and holds off the Buccaneers yesterday. So Tampa Bay is now 7-5. Bucks are one of two teams along with Carolina who haven't had their bye yet. That'll come next weekend. But
they didn't cover.
Oh, that right.
Sir.
I mean, why talk about
it's
the Chiefs?
Like, it's like nobody cares.
Why talk about the Chiefs being 10-1?
When you pick a team and they don't cover by half a point, it's like they didn't cover.
Well, winning. They were up 17-0.
I know.
So you're sitting there going, we're feeling pretty good about this.
I know.
And then, I don't know, man. I have no problem losing at home to Kansas City, a defending Super Bowl champion, Patrick Mahomes, all those offensive weapons. But Tampa Bay's put themselves in a position here where a loss like that, it's not a lock that they make the playoffs.
No, not at all. I told you something's off with them, the Bucks. I don't know what. Their defense has been pretty good most of the season. Yesterday wasn't the usual, but
it's just
there's
hard.
Something not right.
It's hard to put it all together when you overhaul significant positions the way that they did, and you add the fact, and this is different this year, where you didn't have OTAs in June and July, and you didn't have a training camp through August. They didn't have an opportunity. Now, I know Tom Brady ended up going to his offensive coordinator's house. Byron Leftwich accidentally walked in the neighbor's door that time when he was going to get the playbook. There were a couple of reports that he was practicing on a field with some teammates back in August, and that was frowned upon given COVID and all of that stuff. He was trying to get some work in with guys, but they didn't have a proper training camp.
Yeah.
You know, and they've also been run out of the building twice by their main divisional rival, the New Orleans Saints. They've proven to be inferior in those matchups. So I don't know.
Tyreek Hill was a beast.
Oh, 200 plus receiving yards in the first quarter.
The Bucs defense had just no answer for that.
You know, and he's
I was a little surprised to see that. Like, we know how good Hill can be, but I was expecting the Bucs defense to just be able to stop some of it, not all of it. Just don't completely let him walk right through us. So,
well, Tyreek Hill, we talk about best receivers in the game. That name doesn't come up, I don't think, often enough. He's right up
exactly
there. And people would say, oh, he's got Patrick Mahomes. Well, of course he's got Patrick Mahomes, but there's been great quarterback wide receiver duos through the years. Montana Rice, Young Rice, Aikman Irvin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brett Favre had a number of really good targets in Green Bay. So did Aaron Rodgers through the years. Like, it's, you just kind of throw those names out there, and it's Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison in Indianapolis, another good example.
So I'm going to tell you my record. We'll do it after, though. So I'll give you my update on my record. Okay.
Are we throwing a break? Is that
yeah,
okay,
Coach?
No, I like that. That was pretty good. I'm going to tell you
back.
My record.
So I'm going to say this. It's not pretty. I'm protesting a game, and there's a couple games I want to talk about.
Okay. Hugh will join us, and we will go over the Sunday of Ziggy Locks, because you picked all of the games. So we
I'm not doing that ever again. That was the last time I'm picking every game.
Well,
that was, I slaughtered, but we'll talk about
it. Yeah, I knew you were in trouble, about 7 minutes into the first quarter last night on your selection that the Bears were going to cover at Green Bay. Oof. I know that Hugh watched Tyson and Jones, as did Ziggy, so we'll discuss that. We'll get into the Ziggy Locks, and we'll also talk about what seems to be the push now toward moving on from the Rogers Center and some of our favorite Rogers Center memories and what a new ballpark in this city should look like. It's all ahead. So this is the executive decision. This Maradona doc music is going to be our 6:30 entrance from here on out. I feel like I'm in a club in Helsinki.
Great. Yeah, in 1978.
And I'm not complaining about it, but I also haven't been in a club in Helsinki, so I don't know what that feels like, but I would imagine that this is what it feels like if I were to be in a club in Helsinki.
I think they call them Klubendans over there. I'm not sure.
They used to have like an after hours in Stockholm when I played there.
And you, of course, you never went. You never went, of course, right?
I heard about it, you know. It's like, hey, let's go out all night till like 4 a.m. and keep partying after. Well, okay, yeah, great idea.
They do it right over there, man.
Oh, it is nuts.
It's over before the sun comes up, you haven't done it properly.
The sun's up all the time, though. The further north you go over there.
That's a very good point. Yeah, well, not at this time of year.
We're going to party until the sun goes down.
In the winter, the sun never came up, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
Let's keep this thing going.
What time is it? It's like a Vegas casino. Yeah. Nobody knows,
doesn't matter.
Don't have any windows in Vegas. So we've thrown out on the text line, because Ziggy wants to know the stories he should tell if he's asked how he hurt his pinky finger. Because he gave us the update. He hadn't talked about his finger in a month since the surgery, and then blamed me for not asking you.
Well, yeah, it was kind of rude.
It was. Now that I
was going to ask him today. Think,
good. I'm glad. I'm glad that somebody here has a heart. Let's see. Tim in Peterborough. Injured pinky finger was just a warning from Doris. A 226 number. Ziggy injured his pinky falling off a bar stool after drinking with Drew Barrymore in the jungle. See, the beautiful thing about all of this is that it's possible.
Yeah.
They are very possible.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
I mean, we know that Doris could at some point
inflict harm.
Inflict harm.
Could hire some goons.
We know that Ziggy has been blasted at a bar with Drew Barrymore in Costa Rica.
Besties.
Can't even take that serious. That's a good one, though. I've got a...
Paul in North York. I want to get this. Paul in North York, pinky finger injury from counting cards in Vegas. Apparently, they frown on that.
Take you to the back room,
put your hand down. You can have the chips.
Yeah.
Or you can have the money.
That was casino.
And the hammer.
That was you casino, right?
Yes.
Are you right-handed or left-handed? Someone asks you that in Vegas, always say you're the other hand. Don't say, if you're right-handed, don't say you're right-handed.
Okay.
Just a little bit. Yeah, nice.
You can have the money and the hammer. You can't have one or the other. What do you want?
Keep the text coming to 590-590. What is the story Ziggy should tell when somebody asks how he hurt his now surgically repaired pinky finger?
Paul on Twitter says, I injured it changing my summer tires to snow tires. I just did get my tires changed.
Yeah.
Over the weekend.
The one thing
Paul, I did not.
The one thing, Paul, is there's no chance he did it himself.
Yeah, no chance. They know me too well.
No chance.
I would love to say that I could actually change tires. I've changed two flat tires, but I mean, changing all four and making sure they're on the right way and yeah, not happening.
I do want to shout out Hugh Burrell 3.5 months later for helping. Well, not helping me. He did. You did change my tire.
He knows how to do tires.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You
should have called me.
We ended a show one day in August, and Hugh and I went down to the garage, and I'm walking up to my car, and like, I don't know. You can tell optically when something is wrong. The car was way lower than it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this slow leak, my friend.
This doesn't look right. So I get to my car. I look down. The front left tire is just completely flat. So there was Hugh digging through the trunk to get the equipment. And next thing I know, he's fixing my tire.
Little donut tire.
And I rumbled all the way to my mechanics and got it dealt with.
No charge, by the way.
No charge.
Just doing.
Yeah, well, I was wondering what was the charge?
Well, his birthday was about 2-3 weeks later, and I.
And what
it was,
exactly?
It was a combined happy birthday / thank you for saving my ass that day. Bottle of Four Roses.
Yeah, didn't last long.
And it was given to him on a Friday.
It was,
I think. So Dominic Hasek's favorite day of the week, a Friday. It was gone by the end of the weekend. Keep the text coming to 590-590. So I'll just sit back and listen because you guys actually wasted the money on the Tyson Jones fight. Go, have at it, boys. That was a waste of money. Tell me what I miss. Look, I am 100%. Yeah. I am 100% okay, and I stand in zero judgment of anybody who watched that fight. But I don't feel it's my responsibility, even in the position I hold, to watch something like that. What? And I know it's for charity, which is kind of the emotional grab. Well, you know, if you pay for it, it's going to a good cause. Okay, but...
Yeah, but still.
I'll donate to that charity without watching that. Yeah.
Well, let Ziggy start. Ziggy, like, what were your impressions after that? Did you feel like you got cheated a little bit?
I didn't like the fact that it was a... I didn't like the fact that it was a draw. Tyson, to me, clearly won. I didn't like the fact that it was a draw. It was almost like they're trying to stretch it out for... Everyone's like... Like, if they announce in another week or two that there's another fight, are you going to be surprised at all? I'm not.
I just...
Because it's going to happen. There's going to be a rematch.
I just want to raise a red flag on Hugh's question there. If you watched that and in any way walked away feeling like you got cheated, then I don't know what the hell you could have possibly been expecting. Those two men are 105 years old combined.
I haven't seen.
You're watching it because you remember Tyson, the greatness of the boxer Mike Tyson, and you just—it's a nostalgia trip.
And it
is not anything more than that.
And that was it.
And that's fine, but it's not anything more than that.
No, that was it for me. I wanted to see Mike Tyson. It had been like 15 years since he last fought, but I'm with Ziggy about not even halfway through, maybe about the second or third round of that. I kind of looked at my wife on the couch and I said, These guys are fighting to go eight rounds. Now, I didn't think that it would be a draw. Now, let's keep in mind, there were no official judges. It was like three former fighters. Nothing about this was official. Nothing about this was sanctioned. It was just an exhibition match. But I was still curious to see Mike Tyson. Tyson looked good. 54 years old or not, I've seen boxers who are 32 look worse than Tyson in terms of their
shape.
So then, ring presence.
Would you suggest then that he give it a go against somebody?
No, it's a different heavyweight category now. The guys, every heavyweight now seems to be at least 6'7", 6'8", and they're all carved out of a stone. So I would not suggest, and I don't think he wants to. I think he just likes doing this kind of stuff. If you listen to the Ziggy, did you watch any of the post-fight news conference or the interview that the guy had with standing in the middle of Tyson and Jones? What do you think of that?
Yeah, so they both got together after they're doing the whole interview, and they're both giving each other compliments, and it's great, and I'm like, okay, fine. But then they're asking, Jones more about, how are you feeling? Are you okay? Is everything? And then, Tyson responded.
Why nobody care about my ass?
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
Thank you, because I didn't want to say that.
Can you play that again?
Why nobody care about my ass?
But he said, he goes, I was afraid I might get hurt. Yeah. I didn't fight in 20 years. Jones only stopped fighting 3 years ago. And then he said,
why nobody care about my ass?
This is true, because all the concern going in was, oh my God, Roy Jones is going to get murdered by Mike Tyson. He didn't. Jones did not look... Well, Jones did not look in fighting shape. Let's just put it that way. He was
blowed up.
He was sucking wind pretty hard after the first and second rounds. And so he cruised a little bit. But he got some. There were some shots though. Like some punches did get through. There were some pretty hard body shots. So it's not like these guys were. I mean, you can fight a guy and not want to knock him out, but you can still hit him hard. A lot of the body blows and things like that. But, yeah, this was, I guess, in hindsight, Ziggy, fool me once. Shame on you.
Yeah,
fool me twice. Shame on me.
Well, to the two of you, your cable and television provider thanks you for your investment.
The Tyson side of the Tyson fight aside, maybe the most intriguing bout of them. There were four bouts.
Don't talk about Jake Paul.
Jake Paul
knocked
the bejesus out of Nate Robinson.
Isn't he 15?
He's pretty young. But neither of these guys have any boxing skill. But to me, the interesting part is the fallout after, because Jake Paul says he wants to fight Conor McGregor next.
Then
Evander Kane jumped in. Say, no, you fight me next August in Vegas.
I'll tell you this, because I was mocking you two for getting in on that thing. If Jake Paul fights Conor McGregor, I will pay to see that.
Oh, yeah. It's the spectacle.
I will happily pay to see Conor McGregor. That guy?
Jake Paul, he's a fighter, though. He's a YouTube
he's
guy.
He's just
but
a YouTube guy.
His older brother, Logan, is the
But he's got some fight. He's got some fighting experience.
There was no fighting acumen in that
Nate
fight
Robinson
at all.
Robinson has zero.
Yes, Jake Paul had no fighting acumen. Nate Robinson had even less.
Yes.
That was like watching two guys brawl, outside a nightclub behind a dumpster.
I told you about a guy I played with that he called out some guy in a bar one time late after some drinks.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'll take you outside. And he got one punch.
He got taken down.
But it was an actual boxer that he got, because it was just this small guy that didn't look big. And then it was like night.
Gotta be careful, those small guys.
When you're 10 shots of Jack deep and it's 1:30 in the morning and you haven't found the one you're going home with and you start chirping some big dude, you have no idea what their background is.
Yeah, especially today when every second guy is training MMA. I have no idea now.
But when Nate Robinson, when that match started yesterday, I liked that he was aggressive and he was coming out firing. But a little bit of fatigue sits in.
Yeah.
You keep doing the same thing, and that didn't. Second round.
He shot his bolt in the first round. the thing with these guys who aren't trained fighters, they always go out too fast, and then by the end of the first round, they're wheezing because they have no wind, they have no legs, and you box with your legs. Like, all your strength comes from your lower body in boxing. If that's taken away, then you're done. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Jake Paul won. That was a nice punch to knock him out. It was a nice knockout. But at least Robinson broke the fall with his face. So, you know.
And then also Snoop was doing some commentary, play by play. Yeah. He came out, did a little concert in between, a couple sets.
Ziggy, did you hear the best line of the night was when, I think it was in the first round of Tyson Jones. He said, "This is like my two uncles fighting at the barbecue." fantastic. It was great.
So it was nice that he was a part of it. That kind of gave it a little bit of entertainment value. But besides for that, I don't know. Like,
would you buy it again? Like, if Tyson has another exhibition match against, throw a name out there.
Hold on. Let me see my options on a Saturday
Holyfield.
Night. Holyfield. Let's see. I got, let's see. What can I do on a Saturday night? I'm probably buying it. What am I going to do?
Scotty, you just said the magic word.
Tyson Holyfield.
I'm watching that. I don't care if these,
You know what my thing is? Maybe Hugh can answer this. He's the fight expert. I was saying how good Tyson is, and everyone, greatest, you know, he's one of the best of all time. Who has Tyson beat? Who's he beat? Name me one good fighter Tyson's beat. And I've asked this.
Okay, so
I had this asked to me because I said he was great.
We'll have Hugh answer that question, and then we can have Brunt answer that question.
Well, Stephen Brunt would be able to go a lot deeper on that.
Because
Who he beat? Almost everybody that was put up against him. He won the world heavyweight title of 20.
You got to beat the guys schedule.
Trevor Burbick was pretty good at the time.
But the thing was, I was pumping Tyson's tires to a buddy. He goes to me, "Who's he beat?" And I said, "Like, everybody." He goes, "Name me one big name." And I couldn't name one. So then I was like, "Yeah, you're right, actually." I went through his whole list. He beat everybody, but how many big names did he beat? And I couldn't find one. Brunt will.
So you're saying that, like, Tyson was
no, because he's scary.
Was running away.
He's scary.
He's running. The baddest man on the planet was running away from. Nobody wanted to fight Mike Tyson between the years of 1987 and 91.
Yeah.
Like, nobody. So who is there to fight?
That whole Buster Douglas thing.
That was amazing. If you ever get a chance, have you seen the documentary?
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Let me go back down that road a little bit with Steven in the next segment too. It just, that came out of nowhere.
It really did.
Like, we were kids, but I just remember.
I don't even know if that was on pay-per-view because he was such a prohibitive favorite. I remember working that night in a bar, and because the fight was in Japan, and it ended, like, we're all like, "What? He lost? What? To who? Who beat him again? Buster who?" And he didn't just lose. Like, Buster Douglas beat up Mike Tyson. It's like the schoolyard, right? When the bully gets beat up, everyone kind of rises up after that. And after that, he was never, ever, ever the same.
416-870-0590 is the phone number. 416-870-0590. It's at this time every morning we play All or Nothing. And we have Untuckit gift cards we want to give away to you. All or Nothing, three true or false questions. If you get all three right or all three wrong, you are the winner. There is one contestant each day. I've given you the phone number. Dial it now. You could be it. We play next.
It's time to play All or Nothing with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, Hugh, before we get to All or Nothing, very quickly, you've got a rundown of victims of Mike Tyson.
Yeah, well, Ziggy asked, who did he beat? Well, he won the world heavyweight title when he beat Trevor Burbick. And after that, he fought James Bonecrusher Smith, Pinklin Thomas, Tony Tucker, Terrell Biggs, Larry Holmes, Tony Tubbs, Michael Spinks, Frank Bruno, Carl the Truth Williams. Then he lost to James Douglas. So those guys were all good. Like, they had really solid records.
I'll tell you this right now.
A couple of them were undefeated when Tyson fought them.
I'll never pretend to be a boxing analyst, but if you beat people called the Bone Crusher and the Truth...
Well, there's also Mitch Blood Williams in there, too.
Blood?
Blood, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He must have been really tough.
All right, we got three true or false questions as we play All or Nothing. Three true or false questions as we play All or Nothing with $100 in Untucket gift cards up for grabs. You got to get all three questions right or wrong. So if you get the first one wrong, don't hang up. You just got to get the next two intentionally incorrect. Let's go to a Richmond Hill for Lori. Good morning, Lori.
How are you doing?
We're doing very well. Good luck to you. Ziggy's got question number one.
All right. The Steelers and Chiefs are the only NFL teams with double digits in wins. True or false?
I'll say true.
That is correct. Steelers 10-0. Chiefs went to 10-1, and the Saints are close with 9.
All right, Lori, you're in very good shape here. You got to get the next two questions correct, and if you do, $100 in Untucket gift cards will be yours.
Okay, Lori, here's your second question. Matt Patricia was fired by the Detroit Lions. It's rare to fire a head coach mid-season in the NFL. Patricia is the second head coach this season fired, along with Dan Quinn. Is that true or is that false?
False.
Yes. In fact, there have been three. Patricia, Dan Quinn, and Houston tied a can around Bill O'Brien.
All right, Lori, last one for you. Complete the football trifecta. Here we go. The Denver Broncos on offense yesterday threw more interceptions than completed passes. Is that true or is that false?
I'll say false.
That's a tough one.
They threw.
That's the one where I said touchdowns or I meant interceptions.
Yeah,
but yeah.
They didn't have a quarterback yesterday. Kendall Hinton played the position and they threw two interceptions and completed only one pass all afternoon as they very appropriately got smoked by the New Orleans Saints. Coming up at 7:30, we'll give away the mystery box to our qualifier with Jiffy from last week. We had five qualifiers last week. We will open up the mystery box, see what's inside, and announce the winner. And up next, Stephen Brunt on Tyson versus Jones on the Blue Jays and their future stadium plans. And NFL Week 12, Brunt is next. Cam in Niagara Falls on the text line at 590-590, just wondering if the Broncos had checked with the Avalanche to see if their Zamboni driver had quarterback experience. It only took us an hour, Ziggy. It only took us an hour. I was wondering when the when the David Ayers comparison would come in.
I mean, I saw them all yesterday on Twitter. Okay. I hear ya.
We are also asking on the text line of 590-590 for plausible stories as to how you injured your surgically repaired pinky finger. Now, you're about a month post-surgery, and it's coming along nicely. And you were all over me last hour because it was the first time I had publicly asked for an update on the status of your finger, and you felt uncared for, mm-hmm. and I have since apologized. Ziggy blew out his finger making pancakes. It's from an unsigned 905 number.
I haven't made pancakes in 20 years. There's a fun fact.
Let me guess. There's some kind of whey or gluten in them that offends the senses?
Many different ways to make pancakes, but...
There are many different ways to flip a pancake? Is that going to be one of our new sayings now? There are many different ways to make a pancake.
Yeah.
James in Ottawa on a 613. Ziggy hurt his pinky by steering a yacht before having lunch at the yacht club. People are just crapping
steered a yacht before.
Have you steered a yacht?
I have steered a yacht before. I'm getting a lot of Doris on Twitters. Ziggy hurt his finger while losing a one-armed mercy fight grudge match with Doris. That's from Jamie.
No, you had a... You pinky swore Doris for a truce, and she ripped your finger off. That's neighborly hate. Keep them coming. You got any more worth reading or No.
That's what we got for right now.
And we'll get to Mr. Brunt, who's
yeah,
going to bring some maturity to the conversation. Yes. Imagine Stephen Brunt at 7:07 in the morning. He's got his headset on, going, "Okay, let's start this now." So you know what? That's what we'll do. We'll start this from Writer's Block, 2 to 5, Eastern Time weekdays here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, alongside Richard Deitch and Jeff Blair. Here is Stephen Brunt. Happy Monday morning, sir. Happy end of November.
Happy all of the above, yes. Happy dark and chilly Monday morning.
Oh, yeah. And we're getting like 48 hours of precipitation coming up here, too. We're getting some rain, a little bit of snow. It's going to feel like winter. So let's begin with Tyson and Jones. And, Stephen, I mean, I was following along on Twitter, I'll acknowledge, unlike Ziggy and unlike Hugh, I did not watch this event on Saturday night, but I was following along, and I was kind of struck by some of the reaction that I was seeing on Twitter in this way. If you're watching that, if you're buying that and watching that for the nostalgia of Mike Tyson and or Roy Jones, if you're interested in seeing a Jake Paul fight for some reason, like, have at it, man. But if you walk away disappointed or somehow feeling like you were let down, don't you have to reassess some things in your life? Like, how could you possibly be disappointed about something you shouldn't have had any expectations for?
Well, that is a good question, and one that I cannot answer. I think, you know, this, you go into this one eyes wide open. Everybody should have understood what it was going to be. And if you took it that way, if you went in with that feeling, I'm not sure that you would have been disappointed. I thought it kind of over-delivered compared to what it could have been, you know, compared to the fiasco it could have been and might have been. It's always buyer beware in these things. And I remember preaching about that before the Mayweather-McGregor fight back a couple of years ago, saying, look, this is not, if you're imagining that, you know, that Conor McGregor is going to be competitive against a guy who's the best boxer of his generation, Conor McGregor's not a boxer, he's an MMA fighter, you're deluding yourself. But if you go in for the spectacle and all of the stuff that goes around it, and you're willing to drop the dough, be sure. So it's entertainment, it's diversion. And the same thing with this, that Mike Tyson hasn't been a competitive and significant heavyweight for a long, long time. And Roy Jones Jr., his last good fight was in 2003. So what do you think what's going to happen when you put 250 something guys in the ring against each other? You hope that they don't embarrass themselves, and they didn't. Mike looked pretty good for a guy who's 54 and looked better than Roy Jones did. And you know, it wasn't Tyson, Michael Spinks, but you got to roll back the clock a fair ways to get to Tyson, Michael Spinks, and none of us are where we were when Tyson knocked out Michael Spinks. So yeah, I can't imagine anybody going in and saying that's not what I expected. I think the only thing, again, if you're being honest about it and watch that show, it was a weird show, but just looking at the fight itself, you would say that, geez, that was a little better than I expected. That's the way I felt about it.
I was just, the only thing about it is I didn't like it being a draw. I just wanted I believe Tyson won it, but I just wanted somebody to win it. And I don't, was that like kind of part of the, okay, there might be a rematch now? Is that, was that a setup?
No, I think I think Ziggy, it was because it was an exhibition. Like in terms of what the commission in California, there were no official judges because you don't judge an exhibition. It's by definition, there's no result. So they laid on this thing where they had three former champions judge it presumably from afar because they weren't there. So Vinny Paz and Christy Martin, I forget who the third one was. None of them are professional fight judges. And Tyson won the fight. He won it pretty comfortably, such as it was. But because it wasn't 3-minute rounds, because they were big gloves they were wearing, because it was, you know, by definition not a real contest according to the California State Athletic Commission. I don't think it. I've definitely seen fights where, with real judges, I kind of wondered about whether they were setting something up for the rematch, whether somebody might have been influenced. But in this case, I think it's relatively innocent, and I don't know if there'll be a rematch. I don't know if you can pull that off again. I'm not. I know people were saying, "Boy, let's do it again," but
yeah.
Let's see if that really happens.
So I was pumping up Mike Tyson before the fight, telling me how my buddy, how good he is, and one of the greatest fighters ever. And my friend said, "Really?" He goes, "Well, who has Tyson beat?" And I said, "Everybody." And he said, "Well, what big name has he beat?" And I'm pretty much sitting there thinking for a couple minutes, and I said, "No one." And he said, "Well, how can he be one of the greatest fighters if he hasn't beaten anyone? What do you think when somebody presents that to me?" Or well, I'm sure you've heard it as well.
Well, yeah, he beat everybody in the division at that for a good stretch of years. He knocked out Michael Spinks, who was undefeated, the guy, light heavyweight, who went up and beat Larry Holmes for the title. He knocked out Larry Holmes. He knocked out Pinklin Thomas and Carl Williams and the guys who were the best heavyweights of his era. You can only fight against the guys who are there. And later in his career, he got beat by Evander Holyfield twice, who was a great heavyweight, and it's true. But there's like you got to kind of split his career. Beat Razor Ruddock twice, who was in two great brawls. Razor Ruddock was a significant heavyweight, a top 10 guy at that point. So you can only fight who's there, and that that kind of complaint about fighters has been made. It's always one generation normally looking at the new guy and saying, well, he didn't fight who Joe Louis fought. He didn't. But Rocky Marciano faced that criticism. If you look at his record versus Joe Louis's record, people say, well, Marciano retired undefeated, but there weren't any good heavyweights. Well, you can only fight the guys who are around. Ali faced that at times in his career until he fought Joe Frazier, and people understood how good Joe Frazier was. Larry Holmes, definitely. A guy who went 48-0 in his first 48 fights. People said, but who did he beat? So Tyson beat everybody who was around in the middle to late 1980s until his life and his career went haywire. And then Buster Douglas knocked him out, and obviously we know what happened. But I think late Tyson's a different guy, and that has a lot to do with it has a lot to do with what happened to him outside the ring. And it also, if I was going to critique him, and I saw him a lot, I saw him fight 20 times. I saw his ninth pro fight to the Lennox Lewis fight. So I saw it a lot of Mike. The one real criticism I'd make of Mike Tyson is he never came back in a fight to win. He never came back after being down. When he started to lose a fight, he lost. And in some cases he quit. He bailed. He got himself disqualified, or in his last fight, he literally quit on his stool. So that, if you look at great fighters, Ray Leonard against Tommy Hearns the first time, the part of what made him great was that he came back in a fight that he was losing and knocked Hearns out late to win that fight. There's no moment like that with Tyson. He when he fell behind, it just kind of spiraled downward for him.
Stephen Brunn is our guest. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So there is some now to talk about with the Blue Jays, and there is some down the road. And we'll go in reverse order, down the road. The Globe and Mail broke a story kind of late in our show on Friday morning, Stephen, about the fact that Rogers and Brookfield are somewhat down the road on the notion of constructing a brand-new baseball stadium and residential development on the current site of the Rogers Center, formerly Skydome. I'm interested in how you envision all of this playing out. And there are some hurdles to clear between now and getting shovels in the ground. But I'm interested in, from the point where shovels would be in the ground onward, where do the Toronto Blue Jays play for two or three seasons if the Skydome is raised or Rogers Center is raised so that they can build the new baseball stadium on that site? Is there any possibility that the new stadium will be built somewhere else, say on the lakefront somewhere, and the Jays will play in Rogers Center up until the time the stadium is ready to go?
Yeah, first of all, Andy Willis, who wrote that story for the Globe, is a great reporter. And yeah. I had the privilege of working with him when I was at the Globe, and he's very tuned in, especially very tuned into Rogers. He's been covering the attempts to buy Kojiko by Rogers in the last little while. He worked for Brookfield for a while, so you couldn't have a more tapped in guy than Andy covering the story. So take the reporting to the bank, number one. I don't think there's any scenario where the Jays don't have a place to play for a couple of years. So there's two possible outcomes. One is that there is a way to start construction of the new stadium while the old stadium is still there, kind of this kind of thing they did in St. Louis, sort of did it with Yankee Stadium, the new Yankee Stadium, you know, with a little bit of distance between the two, so you can operate parallel. I think anybody who pretends to know what you can do on that site at the Rogers Center, and unless you've been out there with a measuring tape, I'm guessing smarter people than me have thought about it and kind of game planned it and understand what the possibilities are there. But the other option is the Portlands, and I think there's a lot of reason to look at that site, which we've been talking about the Portlands for all kinds of different things over the years, including potentially in Olympic Games. There is land there. There was supposed to be a transit link built that would run through there. It would be in the interest of the city to have that land developed. There's commercial potential down there. You know, so you might be looking at some kind of a swap. Not that the Jays own the land under the stadium, because they don't. But it's complicated because of that. This isn't completely straightforward. So, yeah, there are hurdles to be jumped here. But who's not on side? I think that's the kind of thing when you're kind of looking for why things won't happen. Tell me who doesn't want this to happen. I think Rogers wants it to happen, because it would seem to me they've decided not to pour hundreds of millions of dollars into retrofitting the stadium as it is. You have Brookfield on side, a significant developer, and from the political side, from the city, obviously city building in terms of Portland's, but also, I know we're in dire economic straits right now because of the pandemic, but you know, I've been arguing for the last few days that I think there's going to be an appetite for big projects after this is done. Infrastructure projects, get the economy going projects, create jobs projects, and maybe rethinking cities projects, because a lot of our patterns have changed over the last few months and they may not change back. So I can't see a scenario where something doesn't happen. I would be shocked if everybody's on side. The timeline, I know Andy told Blair on Friday that he thought he'd be sitting in a new press box in 5 years. That sounds pretty ambitious, but I tend to believe what Andy Willis says.
What was your favorite moment in the Sky Dome Rogers Center that you can remember?
Wow. Joe Carter, I was in the aux box, auxiliary press box, which was right where the ball landed. So right in front of me. So that one was pretty good. I'm not sure that was any better than the bat flip. The bat flip was insane and fantastic. And the other two that I think, and some other Blue Jays things, the Eddie home run against the Orioles in the wild card game. So a lot of stuff in 15-16. But the Donovan Bailey, Michael Johnson match race, that whole event was a bit of a fiasco, and the race was a fiasco, but it had that sense. It was a crazy event, and that was loads of fun. And the other one was when, I haven't heard anybody talk about it, but when David Beckham came in with the LA Galaxy for what was the CONCACAF Champions League, and there were 40,000 people in there for that match. And that was the one where people were throwing streamers, so many streamers on him when he attempted, which was not necessarily fair play, but it was kind of fun. He got covered in streamers when he was trying to make a corner kick, but that had a real sense of buzz and event to it as well. That was a great, great night. So there have been a few. Like I've never loved the place, but I'm also old enough to remember what it was like sitting outside in Exhibition Stadium in April, and it was horrible. Like, it's funny how no one's ever nostalgic for that place, right? No one ever says, boy, the good old days sitting on aluminum seats when it was 3 degrees and the wind was whipping off the lake and they wouldn't call the game and you're eating a crappy hot dog. No one pines for that.
Yeah. And you're sitting way down the first base line and you're staring straight ahead at the end zone of the football field beyond the outfield wall. Right.
I mean, the old football stands on the, never mind that, in like left field, center field, because they went away from they were angled away from the outfield fence.
Right.
When they were on the rare time when they filled the joint, the last seats in that covered stand were 50 yards behind the outfield fence, behind the center field fence. Like they're miles away.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was not built for anything, that stadium. It didn't work for anything.
Two more from Sky Dome Rogers Center that I think are worth mentioning, Stephen. One was not so friendly to the Blue Jays. Jose Canseco was the first to hit a home run into the 500 deck. So that was a wow moment because it was the first. And I know that Ziggy will laugh at me, but I'm going here anyway. And I thank Silent Vic for the reminder. The Rock, Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 18.
Yeah.
The crowd was bat bleep crazy for that. You can feel however you feel about pro wrestling. That was a scene.
You know what was weird about that? When I was in the press box, I've never been in it. Being in the press box for wrestling was one of the strangest things. Because, you know, there's not, you know, like waiting for the stats to come by, like waiting for somebody to, we covered it, sat in the press box as though it was sports. Like, and again, I'm all for the spectacle of pro wrestling. It was a scene, and it's fun, and I've been to lots of live shows, but the weirdest thing was kind of sitting there as though it was a ball game. You know, I'm not, you know, it's kind of trying to break down The Rock's performance.
Right. Yeah. Analyzing pro wrestling.
Yes.
That's... Oh, I went to journalism school for this. That's great. But it was an unbelievable scene. And now the with the Blue Jays. And you talk about Andy Willis, great reporter. Well, we know Shai Davidi is too. If Shai's starting to scribble words like the Jays are beyond talking, it's progressing with people like George Springer, that doesn't mean that we sit here and assume, Stephen, that they're going to land George Springer. But I think we can take it to the bank with Shai that some very serious negotiations are happening here. And it shouldn't be surprising because the Jays have been linked to everybody and their dog this offseason. But it's very clear whether it works out or not that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are doing what they can to enhance the talent on this ball club.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. It's not a smokescreen. You know, the notion that they're out there being aggressive in the marketplace, I don't think they would have signaled that they were being aggressive, or the people who cover the sport and talk to a lot of agents and talk to people in the business who are all saying the Jays are out there and they're being very aggressive. I don't think this is some weird, you know, pantomime to appease the fans. I think if you look at where they are in their competitive cycle, this is what they said they would do at this point. And the Ryu signing last year felt early, but I think that signaled something. That kind of told you that they're serious about this. So I don't know who, like, the free part in free agency means it's actually up to the player, strangely enough, not up to the team. It's not like going to the grocery store and picking stuff off a shelf. So we'll see. But yeah, I think what you're hearing and reading is right, that it's a funny market this year. Obviously, it is a slow developing market. Obviously, I think there's huge economic uncertainty for a lot of teams looking at 2021, and that is going to impact the market. But you know, if you're a buyer in that market, you probably are going to have a bunch of options. We know the Mets are going to go crazy because with the new owner and everything. That's pretty straightforward. But I'm not sure. You know, I think you can count the number of teams that are going to be super active on one hand. So it's both the right time for the Jays to do this competitively. You know, not that this is probably not go in dreaming on a World Series season, but it's, you can definitely dream on postseason berth. So it's right for that reason, but it's also, you know, if you're going to be opportunistic and you do have money, this would be a good time to be shopping.
Great stuff, Stephen. We'll leave it there, and we'll plan for this next Monday. Always look forward to it.
All right. See you guys.
That's Stephen Brunt of Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch, 2 to 5 Eastern Time. Weekdays here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Are you ready for Jiffy Box winner number 3? Oh, you've got your hand up. You're about to point at me. You've got something to say.
And we got to do my picks too. Don't forget those before we get off.
Okay. Well, we've got Ross Tucker at 8:00.
I don't want Ross to hear these. Don't.
We got John
Ross.
We got John Paul Morosi. Does he want to hear them?
No, I don't want anyone to hear them.
Okay, you don't want anyone to hear them. Okay, so
just you and me, our listeners.
Okay, so do I need to give the 30-second disclaimer? There's about to be a swear word on the radio. If you have a kid in your car, turn the volume down. Ziggy, the expletives are about to fly as Ziggy shares the results of his Ziggy Locks from week 12. We'll do those. We've got the Jiffy Box to unveil, the mystery box, and we will announce the winner, and we will announce qualifier number 1 for next week's Jiffy Box, which also comes with $100 to Jiffy. It's all ahead.
That box, it's massive.
text coming into 590-590. Giancarlo in North York, the Rock Hogan WrestleMania 18 match still gives me chills. As a group of 16-year-olds in the 200 level, we just couldn't choose between the two wrestlers, which is almost wrestling sacrilege. Watching the YouTube replay of the match is one of the best nostalgic trips of all time. What an event. I guarantee you, if we sat down and watched The Rock and Hollywood Hulk Hogan from WrestleMania 18, Ziggy, you would get into it. You would get into it because of the atmosphere. I promise you. Also, Doug in Brantford, I'm with you, Ziggy. Pancakes suck. Waffles are better. This is a response to you saying you hadn't made a pancake in 20 years.
I didn't say they suck. I do enjoy going out for pancakes. And I go with blueberry or banana nut. Those are the two that I go for. Why is that funny? Why are you shaking your head and laughing at me right now?
20 minutes ago, you said you hadn't made a pancake.
I don't make them. Doesn't mean I don't like them.
So you head to the griddle, like Golden Griddle or?
Yeah, I go somewhere.
Or
Fresh, somewhere, yeah.
Somewhere, oh, Fresh, yes.
They have blueberry or banana nut. And sorry if that...
That is an exciting time. Breakfast with Ziggy. That is... what an existence we live. Yes. What an existence we live. It would probably be better at this point if we weren't on FaceTime together. Ross Tucker and John Paul Morosi in the 8 o'clock hour. Silent Vic, cue it up.
Who's in the box? What's in the box?
Right, Jiffy has been helping to clean out our prize closet to create mystery boxes, which contain signed jerseys, photos, and more for you to win. It's time to unveil our third mystery box and to announce the winning qualifier from last week. I have in my possession the mystery box. I'm just going to shift the phone here, Ziggy,
so you can see it on FaceTime.
I want you to get a really good look at the box. It says
really, mystery really getting box. Creative with the wrapping paper.
Well, I like it says, well, you can't say it's turned upside down, but it says mystery box. It's got question marks on it. Now, remember the leadoff hitter. It's all about getting on base, right? That trusty take a walk, maybe slap a base hit to left field. Little Sportsnet 590, the fan stickers and lanyards. Those are our leadoff hitters,
man. Oh, got
hitters,
the lanyards
man.
Still. They're there. You do not want to forget the lanyards.
They are stickers. Everywhere. These stickers.
Is that a bumper sticker, maybe?
Well, they're a bunch of individual stickers. I think you could use them as a bumper.
How long do you think those would last on a bumper?
They'd probably fade in the sun if you put them in your back window, probably a couple years. But then you can replace them because there's about 10 stickers for you.
Very nice.
How about this little cozy for your...
Oh, koozie.
Koozie?
They call those the cozies down in down south. That's the way they say it. No, that's where the drink holders, you can put your beer in there. You can put your whatever, any kind of beverage. If it's a Coke, you can put a Coke in there. Very nice. I love it.
If it's a alcoholic beverage, you could put your alcoholic beverage in there too.
Yeah.
Now, this is also... This is our bottom of the order hitter right here. This is our nine-hole hitter. This is you're about to turn the order around, but you need a little consistency at the bottom. This T-shirt has been in all three mystery boxes. We're looking for consistency.
I like that, though. Everybody needs a stocked T-shirt, and that is the one that should be in every box.
Now, we got about 48 hours of pre-sip coming. So how about a little Rogers, Toronto Maple Leafs, toque complete with
love
the pom-pom?
Love the toque. Love that. It's wintertime. It's going to be snowing this week. We need that.
Remember, it's when your body temperature falls, heat leaves through the head.
You lose one-third of your heat through your head. Did you know that?
Well, I do now. How about this rally towel? This little Blue Jays rally towel.
That's the rally towel. I think that's just a regular, you can dust with that. I hear lots of people having problems with dust in their apartment right now. That'd be great to dust your...
Where do you hear these things?
That's just what I'm seeing it on Twitter. I'm telling you, it's out there right now. People are having issues with dusts in their condos downtown.
That's because people...
That's when you need that right there.
It's because people have been home for 10 months, but their house cleaning habits
haven't changed a bit. Everywhere.
Oh, that is... Well, I was thinking it, but...
That's what dust is. What here's his towel. You got a bunch... Do you want me to make up a different reason why there's dust in your house?
Got a bunch of dead skin all over your house? Wipe it up with this towel. Now we get to the good stuff. How about this baseball glove? This Rawlings glove.
Buds, I need a new glove. That would be perfect. Are you kidding me?
You think you're...
It's a black glove, right?
It is.
What's the color? Is it faded?
No, it's black with the red Rawlings logos on it. And it's got a tan or brown trim.
It's a left-handed glove. If you're right-handed, you're out of luck. How about if you're right-handed? Can you trade them in?
Well, let's just be clear. You wear the glove on your left hand. If you throw right-handed, it's for somebody who throws.
Well, you know what I mean. It's a left glove. If you need a right glove, you're in trouble.
This next thing, it's an 8x10 autographed of, I would say, the greatest Leafs defenseman, Borja Salming. And take a look. Like, it's an old school photo. That's definitely from the 70s.
Frame that on the wall.
And you know what?
That's frameable for the wall. You know there's some signed pictures you can't put them on the wall? That's one you can put on the wall.
It's got a certificate of authenticity. And of all things, it's not just the autograph. It's the old Jofa bucket.
Oh.
Classic Jofa bucket. Ooh. Doing a little digging here. Is this the last? This is it. We have an alternate third Blue Jays jersey autographed personally by the great Dwayne Ward. Blue Jays reliever of the early 1990s, was the closer on the 93 championship team, so it's tucked away in a plastic bag. It's safe, it's concealed, and it is autographed. So that and the Borja photo autographed are the main prizes of this Jiffy box. So now let's announce the winner of our five qualifiers from last week. Congratulations to Todd Ashley from Guelph. Todd, last week you won $100 to spend at Jiffy, and today you won our third mystery box. Todd Ashley from Guelph is our winner.
Nice. Sweet.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, Jiffy is helping us to clean out our prize closet and make these mystery boxes. We will give away another mystery box at this time next week. In between then and now, or now and then, as the order may go, you need to qualify. So to enter, you must listen during Good Show, Writer's Block, and Tim and Sid every weekday morning, and you'll collect keywords when you listen in. What you do then is you text them to 590-590 with your name and your city. After you've done that, you tune in every morning at 7:30 to lead off for your chance to qualify. So we're about to tell you the name we drew from all of the entries we received on Friday. If you hear your name, call us back within 590 seconds, and you will immediately win $100 to spend at Jiffy, and you will qualify to potentially win next week's mystery box. So we've drawn the name Sean Morris from Aurora. Sean Morris from Aurora. Your 590 seconds starts now. Sean, call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell. Everyone else, stay tuned for the next keyword during Good Show after 9 a.m. and check out sportsnet.ca/590 for all of our contest details. Good stuff. That Dwayne Ward jersey is sweet.
That's a great box today, though. Huh? This Beautiful. Week? Yeah.
Love it. And
we have.
I just want to say, Dwayne Ward was an absolutely dominant reliever. If you remember those
80s,
Blue Jays,
90s, right?
Yeah, if you remember those Blue Jays World Series teams.
Yeah.
He was special. And they actually got him in a trade. He was a minor leaguer, so a prospect in the Atlanta system.
Yeah, played Atlanta 86, yeah.
The Blue Jays had an aging starting pitcher who they had acquired to help them in the 1985 playoff run named Doyle Alexander. They traded Doyle Alexander and ended up with Dwayne Ward, if I'm not mistaken. So a very, very productive trade on that front, because Dwayne was Tom Hanke's setup man in 92 and then was the closer after Hanke moved on in 93, and Dwayne would have had an even longer career had his shoulder not given out, but a brilliant, brilliant reliever back in the day. We're taking your text to 590-590. Man, this how did you injure your finger text thread has just become a thing here, Ziggy. This was a good idea by you. You're looking for a story to explain why you hurt your surgically repaired pinky finger. And I cannot emphasize that enough. Pinky finger. Ziggy blew out his finger doing his best Dr. Evil impression.
Oh, behave.
Oh,
that's a good one.
Oh, behave. Ziggy hurt the pinky punching the wall after watching the outcome of his Ziggy locks this weekend.
Yes, that could definitely be the reason, because it was
ugly.
Very ugly. Should I just, can we just touch on it so we don't have to talk about it anymore?
No. You're not getting away with it that easily. We got Ross Tucker at the top of the hour. We've got John Paul Morosi at 8:30. We've got something to chew on. And you know what? You know what we're going to chew on? We're going to chew on the Ziggy locks, because you ran Sunday's table. You just made selections left, right, and center. We want to hear how you did. He will jump into studio and we'll have some laughs, I'm sure, at your expense. The Ziggy locks for something to chew on coming up. Thumbs down, Ziggy, on Sublime?
Said what I said.
Look, Mike Tyson said he was stoned for his big match on Saturday night.
Why nobody care about my ass?
Exactly. If he'd put man That's or dude be... at the end of that sentence.
Would have been perfect.
I feel like now we have to do a segment on Sublime. I mean, I'm not comfortable with the thumbs down.
I have to admit, I don't know any other Sublime song than Santeria. I probably heard a bunch.
Well, you do now.
Oh, well, there you go. What's the name of this song?
Smoke Two Joints.
Smoke Two Joints.
You might have heard it in the lyrics there.
It's a little on the nose.
Of course, it was because Tyson said he was stoned, right?
Yep.
He said he smoked prior to the match.
Yep.
Yep.
Said he didn't stop smoking weed during... Well, he said he basically smokes every day, and he didn't stop.
Yeah, but I have a hard time believing he could, like, fight and... being under the influence of anything going into that.
Yeah, but Roy Jones Jr. was choking 20 seconds into the match.
He was huffing and puffing.
So you think he did it to even the playing field a little bit?
I'm just saying he was not nearly as threatened by his opponent as he would have been back in the heyday had he showed up with a performance de-enhancing drug, APDD. APDD. We'll spend the week at times going over some of our favorite SkyDome/Rogers Center memories. I feel like, though, it's a little too early to have the funeral and the eulogy for this place, because the Blue Jays are going to be there for a number of years still. I mean...
Yeah, it's not happening tomorrow.
Like, well, not only are they not playing in a new stadium tomorrow, the shovel isn't going into the ground on a new stadium/development tomorrow. So we got a ways to go here, and there could be plenty more good memories to be made in Rogers Center. I'll tell you what wasn't a good memory, Hugh. Ziggy's memories of yesterday. We got a run of Ziggy locks on Friday. What was the record going in? I can't even remember. Were you 13-13 and 12-12-1?
It was 500, whatever. Okay, it was so 12-12.
Could have been 12-12, could have been 48-48 at this point. I mean, I feel like the win total has been in... inflated.
We'll get rid of we're the still record looking into from that. Now on. Yeah. We'll get rid of it.
We're just going to go week to week.
Okay.
We'll go week to week.
And why do we want to get rid of the record now? Is it because
it's even?
Well,
until yesterday.
maybe that's why. Maybe that's why we want to.
What are your and Hughes records this year? Do you guys have your records?
I don't know. I'm 1-0. I predicted Washington was going to pound Dallas, and they did.
I see how it is. We're
it's okay. It's all right. Gang up.
It's better. It's better to lose your bets.
Yeah.
Than to be smart enough to know you're not smart enough to make them. Is that what I'm trying to turn the tables? Ziggy, a classic.
The segment's called Ziggy Locks. It's not called Hugh and Scotty Mac Locks.
This isn't about
Mac Locks. That would be a great segment, though. My Mac Locks.
This isn't about. This is not about winning or losing, guys. This is about excitement. All right.
If you actually put money on the line, it very much is about winning.
Yeah, tell a gambler, hey, it's not about winning or losing. It's about the excitement. It's about winning.
I think before we go through these, we need the disclaimer.
Leadoff is not responsible for any money lost on a Ziggy Lock.
Because, you know, our lawyers get involved.
Yeah, nobody wants the lawyers.
If you don't like the picks, go the opposite way. I mean,
we do.
I'm not holding you to them.
Okay.
If you would have went the opposite way yesterday, you would have won.
All right. So
let's review, shall we?
Take us through them, Ziggy.
Oh, we're going through all of them?
Well.
All right. Well, Arizona lost. There's one to start it off. They were favored by 2. That didn't go well.
No. It was a late in the game.
Last second.
Yep. Sorry about that.
They had a chance to win that and they blew it.
Minnesota didn't cover. See, they were favored by 3.5 when I got to pick them on Friday. Then the line moved to 3. Carolina ended up winning that.
And Carolina was ahead all game, and then Minnesota won late.
Minnesota won late. Minnesota didn't cover, pardon me. Yeah.
0-2.
We got, where's the sign? Give me the buzzer. I want them all. Thank you.
How many are there?
I did have Jacksonville +6.5, and it went to +7.
Okay.
Do you understand how this is tough? Like, the lines are moving on me against me this weekend. Like that, I think that hurt me.
It's not fair to you. I understand.
loser talk. But okay.
Vegas, was that the same Vegas team? I lost that one to Atlanta.
That was the sort of game that Vegas would lose for me last year when I was trying to avoid the Mark Davis haircut. I'd worry that it was getting close, and then Vegas would.
Yeah. What was the spread in that one?
3. Vegas was favored by 3.
Well, they only lost by 40.
No, Atlanta was favored by 30 and covered the spread.
Yeah. Well, I had the Bills. Bills won. They were favored by 5.5 when I picked them. Thank you. The Denver New Orleans game
off the
I
board.
Picked Denver. It's off the board. I'm protesting.
I'll give you that.
One.
I'll give you that. I'm feeling philanthropic.
Okay. I had Miami -7. Then that moved again against me to 6.5. Mm-hmm. So I had that. The Bengals, I had them. They're favored by 6 and it went to 6.5, but I won it anyways. It was over the Giants because the Giants won the game by 2. They had the points. They had the points.
Yes, Giants were favored. Yep.
Yeah. Then I had the Colts at -3. That didn't go well.
Nope.
I don't know what happened to their they forget to show up.
Tennessee's good.
Yeah.
Colts are okay.
But you know what?
Derrick Henry showed up.
I want to ask Ross that. Was it the defense? Was it the Titans offense? Was it Henry? Okay.
Tennessee? You've got like every team now.
We needed
the Dolphins. No, we do not. No, Dolphins.
No. We need the Dolphins won. Yes, thank you. I had them.
Sultry Ziggy with the Dolphins. All right,
I lost. The Rams were favored by 6.5.
I could have told
you. I had KC 3.5. They only won by 3. Huge lead. That shouldn't even count either.
Yeah, it shouldn't, but
And then I had the Bears where the Green Bay was favored by 8.5 and covered.
So you were 4-7 for the weekend. For Sunday.
Yeah.
16-19 on the season.
16-19 on the season. We could have used a Price is Righter there too. How does he have these? I had no idea.
Scary.
There you go. We'll get the Ziggy lock at the end of the show for the Monday Nighter, Seattle at Philadelphia. Hughes update and then Ross Tucker on week 12 in the NFL. And if you remember our conversation from last week, Ross wanted to know where he needed to stop on I-90 from Cleveland to Buffalo. I really hope it was at exit marker 447 in Angola, New York. That's my favorite rest stop. I looked it up. That's not so much a hook, but we are going to ask him about it coming up. Anthony and Hamilton to the text line 590-590. Looking forward to the Ziggy lock at the end of the show, but I've got Seattle minus 5.5. So Ziggy, if you wouldn't mind taking Philly, I'd appreciate it. Thank you for your consideration.
I said you can go the opposite way. You don't have to take my picks. Like I, if you think you're so good, come, let's hear him. Yeah,
come at me.
Yeah, come at me. Let's do it.
Come at the guy who went 4-7 yesterday.
I had one bad week. One. Well, I've been pretty stellar all year.
Nobody will benefit from single game sports betting becoming legal like you, Ziggy. You can just keep it to one Ziggy lock, and we'll
one game a week.
We'll test you out. Ross Tucker is with us for his weekly hit. He does Monday Night Football for Westwood One. You hear him on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You hear him on the Fantasy Feast Podcast. You hear him on the Even Money podcast, but first things first. So, Ross, you were on last week, and you were asking us about where to stop on your drive on the I-90 to Buffalo, and I wasn't sure of the rest stop, and then I forgot to tell you afterward. It was mile marker 447 in Angola, New York. Did you stop there? Where did you stop on your drive?
Yeah, so, man, we got a lot to get into here, fellas. So, first of all, Tuesday morning, I am called by my Westwood One boss and said that and he knew that my college game was at Buffalo. So he said I could switch to Pittsburgh. There was an issue and there was an opening to call the Steelers Ravens. So Tuesday morning, I'm like, yes. So rather than flying to Detroit and then doing that 6-hour drive the long way to Buffalo around Lake Erie, I switched to Ravens Steelers. I'm so excited. I'm going to be able to be with my family here in Pennsylvania till 2:30, drive 3 hours to Pittsburgh, do the game, drive 3 hours right up to Buffalo. Perfect. Couldn't be better. Ideal. That was Tuesday morning. Wednesday afternoon, they postponed the game. So I went from having a game to having a better situation game to no game. And they don't do the games on Sundays. Unfortunately, I can't do the game tomorrow. So I ended up losing a game out of it. So instead, I was just with my family for the first time on Thanksgiving in like 6 or 7 years, which is pretty cool. And then drove up to Buffalo and called an unbelievable, I don't know if you guys saw, unbelievable college football game in which University of Buffalo's running back Jarrett Patterson had over 400 yards and 8 touchdowns. And I just drove home after the game. So I did not get to your famous rest stop there, Scotty Mack.
Okay. Well, keep that in mind. Mile marker 447, I-90, Angola, New York, just before you get into Pennsylvania.
Let me write that down right now for the next time. I never, ever do that drive ever in my life.
But you may end up doing a Lions game and then driving to Buffalo one day or vice versa. You never
know. Yeah, but here's the thing. If that actually happens, hopefully it'll be post-COVID, and I'll just drive through Canada.
Good point.
Which would be awesome. By the way, did I hear you correct when we were coming back? Are you guys not? What is this deal with betting on sports in Canada?
Well, there's now a bill heading into Parliament that would legalize single-game sports betting. The United States Supreme Court dealt with this, what now, like 2 or 3 years ago in some states, Nevada, New Jersey, and others. Because they left it in the state's hands, right? So some states are starting to legalize single-game sports betting. The same move is underway now in Canada, Russ. Because we got to play the parlays and stuff now, right?
And when Ziggy makes his picks, is he doing them straight up or against the spread?
ATS, baby. ATS.
Yeah, against the spread.
Got it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, well, so, but I have to... And you've been having a good year, Ziggy. It's not easy. I was up 3 units for the week, which was nice. I'll take it. You can listen to the Even Money podcast. Hey, I will say this. I'm not someone that gets on and advocates for people to bet or gamble on sports. It's very difficult. It's very hard to make money from it. I think we know that. But if you want to make the games a little more entertaining and you have disposable income to do that, it certainly does make the games more interesting. I mean, games I otherwise wouldn't care as much about, I'm glued to the end of the game because – and that's just for me giving out the picks on the Even Money podcast. Now I'm going to have to look up Ziggy's picks each week and root against them because that's hilarious.
Well, that's what it's become, but – yeah, it's tough picking them on Friday because the lines move also. So I got to get them in Friday. I got so many games. I put some cash on Denver, and look what happened
okay,
there.
But we took that one off the board, right?
I know, but
for purposes
it's
of the
brutal.
Show.
But I said it doesn't matter whether you win or lose. It's excitement. Right. We're here to deal excitement.
Well, and you know, Ziggy, I make the picks on the Even Money podcast on Tuesday. So... Ooh. The good news is several times I'll get ahead of the line, like, you know, what I think is what a lot of people think, and so I'll get you a half a point or a point. But then there's other times, like last week, I said take the Giants laying the points against the Bengals because Ryan Finley is absolutely horrible, the Bengals' backup quarterback. Well, the Bengals figured that out, and instead they started Brandon Allen. But I had already told people on the Even Money podcast to take the Giants laying the point. So you definitely don't have as much information, and so you're going to lose some that way, but you can also get line value and get ahead of things a decent amount of time as well, depending on when you do it.
All right, so let's do the coach and GM firing in Detroit before we go any further. I know Jacksonville fired Caldwell, their GM, after yesterday's loss to Cleveland, but I'm interested in Detroit. So they lay an absolute turd at home on Thanksgiving Thursday against Houston, and that's it for Bob Quinn, the GM, and for the name we know better, Matt Patricia, who went 13-29-1 over 2.5 seasons as the coach of the Lions. He replaced Jim Caldwell, who somehow managed to have a winning record in 4 years, 36-28 as head coach of the Lions. So the Lions replaced a guy who'd been successful for one of Bill Belichick's guys, and it goes completely south, and nobody, Ross, I mean, it's one thing for a coach to get fired. It's another thing for his ass to get kicked on the way out the door. The articles detailing the way Patricia ran that team, the bravado, the arrogance, the disconnect with the players. I mean, I look at that, I read all of that, and being an outsider, you have better insight into this than me. I read everything about Matt Patricia and I go, that guy spoiled his shot. He will not be hired to be a head coach again in the NFL.
No, he won't. And probably shouldn't be. You know, it's interesting because Matt Patricia was my coach. When I was in New England, I got signed by New England halfway through the 2005 season. And back then, Matt Patricia was the assistant offensive line coach, if you can believe that. Then they moved him over to defense, becomes the D coordinator, blah, blah, blah. He was the assistant offensive line coach. Like for 2 weeks, I was with him like every second, trying to get caught up to speed on everything. I really liked the guy personally. But the things that you hear, first of all, two things. I really like the guy personally, but he deserved to be fired. I mean, there's no disputing that. The Lions did the right thing. You can't be that bad for what he took over. They have Matthew Stafford. And then, specifically, to be that bad on his side of the ball, to be that bad on defense when he's a defensive guy. So he deserved to be fired. I will say I think it's interesting seeing all these reports and all these comments from the players, because that was not my experience with him, but he was the assistant offensive line coach back then. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't the head coach. And it does seem like one of the real common themes of the Patriots coaches, when they go elsewhere, the Belichick tree, is they really rub the players the wrong way. And it doesn't surprise me. I've told people for years in New England, it's 100% negative reinforcement, 100%. And look, they have success with that, and kudos to them. I think that's why Brady didn't want to be there anymore. I think it's why Gronk didn't want to play for him anymore. And maybe you can argue it's why they've had all that success they've had, or maybe you can just say they've had all that success that they've had because they had Tom Brady. But that just doesn't play when you go other places. Like, unless you're really winning and the guys can buy in, they're not going to buy in if everything's negative, negative, negative when you're losing.
So just to follow up on that, the whole MO there, and it's been different with Cam Newton, probably because Bill Belichick realizes what it takes to motivate Cam's personality. And quite frankly, that's important. That's what leaders do. They understand the individual personalities of the people who work for them, not the other way around. But the MO has traditionally been to just screw with people. Or they think that motivation comes from beating somebody down psychologically.
Well, the best example I can give, it's not verbal all the time, right? But every morning starts with a low light video. So it'll be like the five worst plays from practice the day before. And it's kind of like sarcastic, and what are you doing? What are you thinking here? And so I will say it's a pretty big motivator in the sense that you really don't want to be embarrassed for your effort or for not knowing what you're doing in front of all your teammates the next morning. So that part of it probably works, but it's just an interesting way to set the tone for the day every day. You know what I mean? Like, let's start today with the five worst plays from yesterday, and let's criticize this guy or make fun of this guy. People ask me all the time, what makes Belichick so great? And can you tell me about Belichick? Because I was there. And that's one of the things that stands out. And it's just very interesting that they have that much success with almost 100% negative reinforcement.
If you're Matt Nagy today in Chicago, are you kind of on the hot seat now with the embarrassing loss to the Packers?
Yeah, he is. And I don't know. He's probably 50-50 whether they'll bring him back. I personally think they should fire the GM, and the new GM should give Nagy one more year. I mean, Nagy was, what, 12-4 his first year, 8-8 last year? And if you look, they've got bottom two or three offensive line in the NFL, bottom two or three quarterback situation, bottom two or three running back situation. I guess because of Allen Robinson, maybe they're only bottom 10 wide receiver situation, but they're certainly not in the top half of the league. I mean, they are an offense that is bereft of talent. Look it up, Ziggy, real word, bereft of talent. I would like to see a GM come in and give Nagy what would feel like a fighting chance, especially a quarterback in O-line. I mean, come on.
So, and only because I've seen his name linked to the Bears, the assumption here, Ross, is that the New York Jets with the first overall pick, and quite frankly, the Jets may not win a game, so they will have the first overall pick, will take Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson. And that will necessitate the trade of Sam Darnold out of town. Is Darnold... Do you still see Darnold as a franchise quarterback for his next team? And could that team be the Bears? And could an offensive mind like Matt Nagy work wonders with a guy like Darnold?
I don't think you can go with Darnold as your starter.
Really? Okay. Some people think that, others don't.
I think he would be a good fit, like in Pittsburgh, as a backup to Big Ben for a year and develop him. And he almost needs to, like, a total reboot, man. I mean, they scored 3 points yesterday. He's really gotten outplayed in New York by Joe Flacco. They got all their receivers now, Perriman, Denzel Mims, Jamison Crowder. They scored 3 points. You know, Flacco scored 20 points the last couple games with the Jets. Darnold scores three. I don't know how you can look at a guy getting outplayed by Joe Flacco and think, yeah, that's our guy.
With Ross Tucker, we know you got to run in a couple of minutes, so we'll leave it with one final topic. I'm interested in your take. I don't think that there's any shame in losing to the Kansas City Chiefs. Captain Obvious speaking here. But Tampa Bay is now 7-5 heading into their very late bye week. What is your assessment of Tom Brady, of this kind of group of stars that's been thrown together with the Buccaneers, and where things are at this late into their first season together? They're on the precipice of falling out of a playoff spot.
So I don't think that, I think the secondary struggles. I think Brady is clearly not as comfortable in this offense and with this new group of guys as he would otherwise normally be or like to be. And I think it shows. And I don't know if they'll be able to get it turned around in time to get it going in the playoffs. And they're going to obviously have a really tough road now. I mean, I still think they probably make the playoffs. If you look at their schedule, I think they probably get to like, they might even get to 11 wins, but I think they'll make the playoffs. But three road playoff games is going to be very tough. They're not going to win that division. It's going to be the Saints. So three road playoff games, it's just going to be too tough of a road. They might be able to win one or two, but they're not going to win all three. And it feels like things have been worse since they got Antonio Brown. You know, it's like that they had to bring one more guy in, and it kind of upset the apple cart.
Tell us, and you started to last week, tell us about my front page story.
Yeah, so this is a business a buddy of mine started that I've working with him on. It is the best holiday gift, or really any gift I'm aware of. You talk to, it's professional writers. So you talk to a professional writer about your loved one, your wife, your mom, whoever it is. They write the most unbelievable story about them. And then you get it sent. It's framed. It looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper. It looks like it's on right on the cover of the newspaper. And the two coolest things about it are when you hand it to your wife and you say, hey, babe, I want to do something special for you this year. So I had a story written about you. Or a parent or a grandparent. It's just amazingly powerful to be able to tell someone you had a story written about them. And then when they actually read it in print, like my sister and I got one from my mom when she turned 70. And when she read the quote from my sister about she wouldn't be the woman she is today if it wasn't for my mom just started bawling. I mean, it's just something really, really powerful about seeing it in print. And it starts for like $50 and you can literally talk to the writer while you're commuting to work or you're driving. I mean, it takes 15 minutes. They write this awesome story. You get to give it to your mom or wife or whoever. She'll cry and you'll win. MyFrontPageStory.com. MyFrontPageStory.com.
And we'll talk to you next Monday at 8, Ross. Love it. Talk soon.
See you, dudes. Good luck next week, Ziggy.
Ooh. See, now we've started something here. We're going to – it's going to be Ziggy
I
Lock.
Said, don't now, bring it up to – oh, he, now, oh he was listening. That's
now
right,
that yeah. Ross knows, he's going to ask you about your Ziggy Locks every week. So now that there's an extra
maybe
layer of pressure.
Maybe we'll go heads up with him maybe. Maybe I'll take him on a couple games.
You better do
our
it
Monday,
deep
our Monday. Our Monday – we'll do a Monday Nighter together.
This should be your life goal. To be a requested guest at some point on the Fantasy Feast podcast.
That's you would love that.
Coming up on the Fantasy Feast podcast from Toronto, Mike Zigamanis, the Ziggy Locks expert.
I lost. You know who I lost my game against, actually? Steve Rapp. He had Atlanta in the Raiders game.
He did.
So I have to take him out to Tam O'Shanahan for a golf next year. You can come in.
You have me? Or you?
Yeah, you can. I was going to say you can come be my caddy, but no, you can play too.
Well, 2021, Ziggy, make Scotty golf again. That's the goal for the year. Make Scotty golf again.
Scotty 2021. I forgot.
You know, and I'm trusting.
Cheese, everything,
dude. I am trusting
you're
you,
Scotty.
I'll spend the money, but I'm trusting you to make this happen. We got to get clubs fitted. We've got to hit the bubble in the winter. We got to have that first round in April when everything starts to open up. We're going to be serious about this. We can't half-ass it. There's no time here to half-ass this thing. If we're going to make Scotty golf again for the first time consistently since I was a teenager, It's going to take a lot of work.
We can get your game dialed next year.
See how many shots.
Very, very confident. What will help, though, is if you could get to a simulator throughout the winter once a week and just swing, get the, you know, get the juices flowing. So when the springtime comes, you're ready to go.
Okay.
Kind of tough right now. All the golf domes are all closed, but wait, hopefully they'll open up soon.
Yeah, when we get them opened up, we'll do a deep dive investigation on how to best go about this. This is a years-long project. John Palmarossi of MLB Network. Shai Davidi has the Blue Jays deep into talks with George Springer. John Palmarossi has the Blue Jays eyeing Colton Wong, who was non-tendered in his final year of arbitration eligibility by the St. Louis Cardinals, a plus defender at second base, a below league average hitter. Lots of balls in the air for Toronto. We'll discuss them with John Palmarossi next. Well, you know, Ziggy, we've worked on this show together long enough that if I see you drinking something on FaceTime, I'm going to ask you what it is. So what, you had a big bottle of something orange. Was that straight up orange juice or?
It's a little organic sweet apple cider made from pressed organic apples. That's all I got.
I've never met.
From Canada.
I've never met an organic apple presser in my life.
I
wonder
washing,
who presses these organic apples.
I was washing down my turmeric cup. I do turmeric powder, ground up black pepper, and cayenne pepper in water. A little stir.
What? Oh, sorry. You were...
And I told you this before. I splash it with a little apple cider vinegar if I want some taste, but today I went sans.
I mean, honestly, who among us
apple cider vinegar?
Who among us doesn't spike our favorite drinks with vinegar? I mean, that sounds like just a completely normal thing to do. I've been offered, Ziggy, on Twitter.
What do you got?
A set of golf clubs.
Wow. How about me?
So I don't know the name of this person, but it's at Design Republic X. I have a decent set of clubs you can have. COVID-19 has made me too fat to ever swing them again.
What's the brand? Can you ask for the brand? Can you reply on that or no?
Well, if Design Republic X is listening, perhaps they can follow up. Tell us the brand and all of that. Send a DM, send it publicly, whatever you want.
I would say we should probably ask if they're right or left-handed, but I don't think it's going to matter with you.
I'm right-handed.
Okay.
Like most golfers. Not everyone, but like most. Okay, John Palmarossi, because there's a lot of baseball talk from MLB Network. But we can't start with baseball talk. Oh. I got a riddle for you, John.
Oh, I'm ready for this one.
Okay. Here's my riddle. If I am winless and I play football for Penn State, where am I going for my first win of the year? Just off the top of your head.
I would say to one of the great cities in the world, which is Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is where the Nittany Lions went on Saturday. And to add to the tales of woe, you saw the Lions fire their GM and head coach as they continue looking for that elusive second playoff win since 1957. All of which explains why I have spent a lot of time in recent days watching Calcio. I'm going straight to Serie A. I've watched a lot of Milan. I've watched a lot of Sassuolo. I've watched a lot of Juve. I'm going back to my Italian roots, watching a lot of Calcio because the American football sides of my state are very uninspiring, except the Spartans beat Northwestern. But one final note on my home state, I do want to credit tremendous production work to begin this segment with some Greta Van Fleet, the great rock and roll band from the city of Frankenmuth, Michigan. Beautiful, beautiful town there, Frankenmuth. And actually, fun fact, I spoke at the commencement, unwittingly. I was the commencement speaker of the two twins in that band at Frankenmuth High School. How about that?
You know, I have to give you credit, John. You did an excellent job of weaving two or three things in after the University of Michigan football discussion to take me right off topic. Like, it makes me look like the jerk if I circle back and make some comment about a brown stain in the back of the khaki pants. or something like that. You know, good for you. You know how to play the game, brother. You know how to play the game. Very, very good. Very good. Okay, so let's itemize this stuff, and we'll start with your report. Shai Davidi's got something on George Springer that we'll run by in just a little bit. Colton Wong was non-tendered in his final year of arbitration eligibility with the St. Louis Cardinals. That makes Colton Wong a free agent. He is a plus defender, but a slightly below league average hitter. Left-handed bat, second baseman. How serious are the Blue Jays about Colton Wong, and how serious is he about them?
Well, he's not their top priority. Of course, DJ LeMahieu is still the number one priority until he signs somewhere else, and certainly a lot of people do expect him to go back to the Yankees. But if LeMahieu goes that route, then I think the Jays look at that next tier of options, which could include a Francisco Lindor trade, could include a Chris Bryant trade, and yes, could include Wong, who I think is the best free agent second baseman out there after LeMahieu. He's won back-to-back gold gloves in the National League, and I think we realize that this Jays team had some defensive and fundamental shortcomings during the course of the year, and I think Wong, as someone who really defends well, is a player who would help them address those deficiencies. So he's not their top target right now, but he could become one depending on how things fall in the days to come. And I think in general, we'll know a lot more about where the Jays and really every team in the league stands, I think, by the end of this week. You've got the tender deadline is Wednesday, where we'll start to see a lot more free agent activity at that point. Travis Shaw likely to be non-tendered, so I think we'll start to see a little more clarity with respect to the free agency after that.
So, yeah, we've got Brantley and Springer, right, that are up. Who do you think, if the Jays had to pick one, I know obviously Brantley's not as good defensively as Springer, who would you rather have?
I think Springer is the more dynamic talent between the two, and certainly he's going to be more expensive. We know that. Brantley's swing, though, I think fits very well at Rogers Center as a really nice shorter-term deal. But again, you look at the full picture. I would rather have Springer. I think he's the more dynamic talent. And I was told last night by a source who knows George pretty well that he's given a lot of serious thought to playing in Toronto. I think you look at George's options, and the Mets certainly are a possibility. They're still working through what their front office structure is going to look like. The Boston Red Sox as well. And remember, of course, George is from Connecticut, so the Mets and the Red Sox, both reasonable driving distance to where he grew up, certainly some appeal there. But it does seem to me that playing closer to home in the Northeast is something George wants to do. And obviously Toronto would fit that description to some extent. And you consider overall, from the Jays' perspective, why Springer makes so much sense. You know, he's someone that you would have for the long term. And unlike Lindor necessarily, unless you're able to extend him as part of a trade, and Bryant, of course, is a one-year deal as well, Springer, if he comes, is almost certainly going to be on an extended term, and he's someone who's been a World Series champion. He's someone who's been around winning. He's someone who's been there as the Astros got a lot better very quickly back in 2015. So he really checks every box you want from an on- and off-field standpoint, and I think, you know, for a lot of reasons to me, Ziggy, I think he'd be my top choice among the outfielders.
So, John, I mean, if you're signing a 4 or 5 year deal with a team, the factors specific to year one would probably not be the only things you'd be looking at. But there is this possibility that the Blue Jays won't be able to start the 2021 regular season in Toronto. We know that they had to play in Buffalo last year. We know that we are going through a rather significant second wave, both in your country, all over the place, certainly here in southern Ontario, specifically the greater Toronto area. And the federal government has told the Toronto Raptors that they can't start this coming season in Toronto. So would the prospect of beginning next year in Buffalo, possibly playing the entirety of next season in Buffalo or somewhere else, prevent players from wanting to sign with the Jays? Or would they look at a 4 or 5 year contract and say there might be some short-term pain, but eventually we'll get to Toronto and things will be as they be?
No, it's a great question. I think that, to your point, the shorter the deal, the more that becomes a consideration. If it's a one-year deal and you're deciding between a one-year deal at the same money closer to where you live, and there's not that geographic uncertainty about where you're going to play, then I think absolutely for some players it would be a factor. But to your point, if it's a 4 or 5 year deal, I think it becomes less of a consideration. And I would say too that, you know, and not to delve too much into the scientific aspects of things right now, but I really do think that when you consider the amount of vaccines that are showing a lot of promising efficacy signs right now, that by April to May, I think we've got a chance to be in a much better place than we are today. And so, if it ends up being a 1 month delay, 1 month in a span of a 4 or 5 year deal is a relatively small percentage. And I also think, as we've heard some owners even say publicly here in recent weeks, the fact that we're not sure necessarily, obviously there's a schedule that's been announced, but it's not firmly 100% definite this is when opening day is going to be, I don't think. And so it's possible that if the governmental authorities say, hey, we think by May 1, it's going to be a lot better than April 1 from a standpoint of how widely distributed the vaccine is, and that if you start on May 1, for example, regular season, maybe you're going to be able to have a fully you'll be able to have your stadium open at full capacity as opposed to not on April 1. I think it's just as likely that rather than and obviously the Jays are just one of 30 teams to think about, but I think the chances are equal that maybe they just push the season back by a couple few weeks, so that way everybody can start at home with 100% capacity if, in fact, the vaccine has been successful and distributed by then.
John Paul Morosi is our guest. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I find it, so as the talks pick up with the Rogers Center and what to do with it and the new stadium, I find it interesting that baseball is the only sport, you know, NBA, NHL, NFL, they all have the same surface, right? Ice rink, field, ball, you know.
Right.
But ballparks in the MLB, they're all different. What do you think should happen with the new stadium in Toronto? Would you go towards a hitter's park, or would you change up something different than what they have right now?
It's a fun question to think about, right, Mike and Scott, because it's something that we haven't obviously thought about in Toronto in a very, very long time about what the ballpark could look like, how it might be designed. It's interesting, of course, that you think about Texas, and I remember hearing a year ago, oh, it's still going to be a very hitter-friendly ballpark, and then we get there for the World Series, and it's not. And it's kind of a surprise. So there's a lot more factors that play into this that go beyond just the dimensions, and some of them are unforeseen. There's climate, and climate change has had an effect, and you think about other things as well, and the way that the buildings are situated around the stadium also has a factor too. So it really is a pretty unique set of circumstances. But I think overall, maybe make it a little fairer, Mike, from a standpoint of obviously it's been a very hitter-friendly park in Toronto for a long time. Maybe move the fences back just a touch. But then again, the Jays made it to back-to-back LCSs with a very offensive club and a team that was a lot of fun to watch because they really slugged it. So I think, guys, that there's a lot to be said for not changing things too much in terms of dimensions, even though obviously the Rogers Center is set up as a mostly symmetrical facility with a mostly symmetrical fence line, so to speak. And I think that whether it's a retractable roof, I would assume it probably will be. There's a lot of different things that can be folded into that to make it a very unique place to watch a game. So, I mean, I'm excited that the idea is out there. And obviously it's going to be a long process. This is not something that happens overnight. But I'm excited for the fans of Toronto because I think it's time to have a world-class facility for these days. Certainly, I remember when SkyDome first came around, driving up with my family, and that was the hardest ticket to find in North America for anything. I remember there was a Jays Tiger series going on. And it was like, I don't know, like $100 Canadian just to get in the door, and we couldn't afford it back then. So it was just an amazing experience back then. But I think to your point, the time has now come, and it's an exciting period of time for the Blue Jays.
The last thing that I'd ever be accused of being, John, is an architect. So I can't claim the name Art Vandelay. But I'll tell you, as I got to thinking over the weekend about things I'd like, you know, you've had, and I've been very blessed too, you've had the opportunity, I would imagine, to be in every stadium. And one of the concepts I really like is the glassed-in component. Like, I think Milwaukee does it really well. That's a cold city when you're not in the dead of summer. And they've got the roof you can roll back, but they also around the outfield have glass, so natural light comes in. I think if the Blue Jays could incorporate that, you have to have a roof, because early April, and let's hope that there are some late October baseball games at some point, it's just that cold comes off the lake and it's not comfortable. So you have the roof, and if you can glass it in and get some natural light in there, I think that ambiance is so important.
It's a great call, Scott. I think that's a phenomenal call. I mean, that to me, in Toronto, you guys know how I feel about your city. It's such a beautiful place, and I think being able to integrate just what a unique downtown or wherever the park ends up being, even if it's out of downtown a little bit, just to be able to see the views of the water, the views of the skyline, whatever it ends up being, you're right. I think that, you know, even for those of us that have seen a lot of outdoor games at Rogers Center over the years, even though you can't really see a lot of the city from where you're sitting unless you're up high, it's such a beautiful downtown, just when the air is open, to be able to see that. But also, to your point, when it's closed, you want to be able to have that window to the rest of the city. I think even in Marlins Park, they do that pretty well there with the view of downtown Miami. It's in the distance a little bit, but it's there. And so I think that, in general, it's a great point that you make, Scott. And for me, I've always felt like I love the parks where, like Pittsburgh, which is to me the best of them all from a standpoint of views and the way it's integrated to the city. The best parks are those that if you drop me, you know, blindfolded in any city in any seat of that ballpark, and then you took the blindfold off, I could take one look and I would say I know exactly what city I'm in because of what I'm seeing. And that's true in Pittsburgh. It's true in San Francisco. And it should be true. It should be true in Toronto. It's such a gorgeous city in the world. I love being in downtown Toronto so much that I want this new ballpark to, wherever you're sitting in the stadium, to look out and say, my gosh, what a gorgeous city, and to have that feeling, and really to integrate. You know, we've seen different ballparks. Atlanta's one of them where it's really well integrated with a lot of different areas to shop and eat right around there. It makes me excited to think about what the future will look like. You know, hopefully in the post pause and post COVID world, what that'll look like, and being able to gather in large numbers again, and no better city to do that than in the great city of Toronto.
Hot stove season firing up. We'll get you back on next week, and in the meantime, say hi to Jim Harbaugh for me.
I will. Well done, by the way, to bring it all the way back to the beginning at a time when I have no time to formulate a solid rebuttal. So well done on the hosting side as well.
Oh, you didn't think I was going to let you off the hook. But I recognize the game you were playing last at the start of the discussion. I got to tip my cap. We'll talk next week, John.
Oh, have a great week, my friend. Thanks for everything.
John Paul Morosi of MLB Network. The Ziggy Lock for the NFL Monday Nighters, Seattle at Philadelphia. We'll give it to you next. Sublime song for you, the one you know.
Thank you. Good tune. You're only going to know one Sublime song. This is the one to know.
Is this thumbs up, Ziggy? Okay, because we got thumbs down from Ziggy for Smoke Two Joints. Ready for the Ziggy Lock for the NFL Monday Nighter? Now, you better...
As ready as I'm going to be.
I'll tell you this right now, Ziggy. You better leave the stove on simmer. Don't overheat it. Because you got another pick you got to make for tomorrow's game tomorrow morning, since we got a Tuesday game between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. But anyway, sports interaction right now. Seattle on the road. Oh, you love this number. 6.5-point favorites at Philadelphia.
So I usually like that number. The Seahawks won their last game against the Cardinals. The thing I don't like going against Philly is that Philly, they can keep games close when they lose. That's what kind of worries me. I like the number 6.5, but against the Eagles, not a great record this year. In this one, though, I am going to go with Seattle minus 6.5. Bam, 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 bam. On the road.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me just lock in my Eagles pick.
Russell Wilson.
See, I'm gonna take the Eagles. Thank you very much. I don't think the Eagles are necessarily gonna win, but I'm gonna take them to cover because I think Seattle's defense has holes in it, and I think if Philly's at home, Seattle's a much better home team than road team, and all that. I think it's gonna be a good game. I do think Seattle wins, but I'll take the Eagles to cover. We'll see who was right tomorrow.
Can't wait. It's going to be a good one. I'm telling you. I think it's going to be a good game.
It will be. We are back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Ken Reed will join us. He's on the holiday book tour. Ken is quite the author. Looking forward to talking to our buddy from down on the TV side. Good show's next.
It is a massive, massive box. On Shark.com.